Tonight, the Republican presidential candidates will participate in a CNN YouTube debate. Will it be substantive or gotcha politics? And we'll discuss the history of Christian charity in America. How does this compare to a welfare state? This is Jerry Johnson live from Criswell College. Join us as we look at today's news from the Christian worldview for Christ and culture.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
I have a dream.
It depends upon what the meaning of the word is.
And the people who knock these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
We will not tire, we will not falter, and we will not fail.
Welcome to Jerry Johnson Live. For the next hour, this is your place for relevant discussion of topics in the news and in our culture from a Christian perspective. Your host is Dr. Jerry Johnson, president of Criswell College and Criswell Communications. Later in the show, we'll open the toll-free lines for your questions and comments. You may also email us at talk@jerryjohnsonlive.com. Now, here's your host, Dr. Jerry Johnson.
Hi, this is Tom from Las Vegas, Nevada. My question is, I'd like to know which one of the candidates thinks they have the best chance to beat Hillary Clinton in November, and I'd like to know why.
Who has the best chance to beat Hillary Clinton and why? That is a YouTube question submitted for the Republican candidates tonight on the YouTube debate. We're going to hear more of those questions in the next half hour. We're going to ask you to interact. The number is 800-881-9270, 800-881-9270. And you might be asking, well, is that even appropriate for us to talk about who could beat Hillary Clinton? Or is it even appropriate for us to talk about the presidential election on a Christian radio station? I'm going to answer that question in just a moment. But today, Bill Clinton, former President Bill Clinton, speaking to Iowa Democrats, claims that he was against the Iraq War.
Even though I approved of Afghanistan and opposed Iraq from the beginning, I still resent that I was not asked or given the opportunity to support those soldiers.
Now, what was that all about? I resent that I was not asked to support the soldiers. It was about this. Clinton is talking about the fact that he has not had to pay more taxes, that the rich people don't have to pay more taxes, and that he wanted to support those soldiers more, but he got tax cuts instead. How genuine do you think that is? We're going to talk about Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, and all the Republican candidates and why it should matter for Christians in just a moment.
Well, he can certainly pay more taxes if he wants to. Also, we're going to talk with a historian who says that Christian charity shaped America. So we can ask the question, did the welfare state that surfaced in this country usurp the role of the church? And also, who gives most, liberals or conservatives, Christians or non-Christians? Our guest is a political science assistant professor at Brigham Young University. So we may ask him a little bit about the Mormon candidate, Mitt Romney.
Okay, so tonight on CNN, Anderson Cooper is the host, the YouTube debate. And you'll remember the format. Folks all across America submit questions on YouTube, these video presentations with questions. And I think it'll prove to be a very interesting kind of debate. And someone would say, well, why should Christians even be talking about this? We had a caller last week who said, you know, we need to be careful talking about all this politics because Jesus said, my kingdom is not of this world. And I just want to say quickly, Penna, and I'm going to give other examples later. Jesus said we're to be salt and we're to be light. The world is decaying. We're the salt. The world is a dark place. We're the light. And abortion right now is taking a million lives a year in America. The next president of the United States will appoint three Supreme Court justices. These justices will most likely either sustain or overturn Roe versus Wade. It's very important who gets in the White House. And we heard that questioner ask earlier, who has the best chance of beating Hillary? For a lot of people, that's the question. Maybe it's the wrong question, but it is the key question for many people. And the answer, a lot of people think, is Rudy Giuliani. He's been the front runner for the Republicans, and he seems to be the man to beat. But it's not automatic for him. But there was a question submitted for Giuliani. Here it is.
I'm Kelly from St. Louis. I have a question for Mayor Giuliani. Mayor Giuliani, when the war on terror is finally won, do you believe it will be due primarily to military-type actions, police-type actions, or something else, like positive changes in the relationships between cultures?
Okay, Penna, you know, everybody is assuming that Rudy can win, and he's going to win on terror. He's going to win on the defense issue. And perhaps he will. But Joe Biden actually said, wait, this seems to be a one-theme candidacy.
Rudy Giuliani. I mean, think about it. Rudy Giuliani, there's only three things he mentioned in a sentence, a noun and a verb and 9/11. I mean, there's nothing else. There's nothing else.
And I want to open the phone lines now, Penna, because here's the question. The point is, when you can make a joke about something and people laugh, it means there's an element of truth in the joke. And that is the fact that Giuliani is banking on the terror issue, a fear kind of an issue. I had someone walk up to me in church several weeks ago and say, you know, you guys talking about all these other candidates, you're going to let Hillary get elected. We've got to support Giuliani. And here's my question for the listeners out there. Should Christians compromise their belief on the sanctity of human life, on marriage, homosexual marriage, on stem cell research, on public funding of abortion? Should Christians compromise these beliefs and support Rudy Giuliani? The number is 800-881-9270. 800-881-9270. You call us. Let us know what you think.
Well, Hillary Clinton is running basically on her experience, quote unquote experience, being in the White House with her husband for 8 years. Now, Rudy's running on 9/11. He's running on how well he handled the situation in New York City after 9/11. And he's calling himself a conservative, but there are many ways in which he was not as mayor. So terror is certainly an issue, and a lot of people put it as the number one issue, our safety, our security, and the war against terror. Maybe it is the number one issue for a lot of people, and it's probably not going to go away by the election. Iraq may go away. The war in Iraq actually may die down. Things may begin to be resolved by a year from now. But I think what we have to do as Christians is we have to think about what's important, and we have to remember that there are also other candidates who will be tough against terror. It's not just Rudy Giuliani who has the right position on that. So we have to weigh this. And, you know, the press is saying that Rudy is it. He's the candidate. But the polls are saying something different. I mean, right now there's a new Rasmussen poll out that puts Mike Huckabee, of all people, as number one with 28% of the vote in Iowa of likely voters, people who will go to the caucus. And the next one in line is Mitt Romney at 25%. So those two really far ahead of the other candidates in the first caucus state of Iowa.
And it's not only that. On the Democrat side, it may not be Hillary that they're up against. Obama is ahead. Obama is ahead of Hillary in Iowa. And three Republicans right now beat Hillary in the polls in a general election. So it's not automatic that only one person could beat Hillary, and that person being Giuliani. And would you sacrifice the sanctity of human life? Would you sacrifice biblical and traditional marriage just to beat her when you don't even know she's going to be the opponent? We've got callers now. Nelson on the line from Arlington. Nelson, who are you supporting and why?
I'm not sure yet who I'm supporting. Definitely be Republican, one of them. But the answer to the question is unequivocally, we should never compromise our position for the sake of a political gain,
yes,
even if we're going to lose. This country is in God's hands. And if we stand our history is replete with examples of people who have compromised and it came around to bite you later. We don't need to participate in that. We need to say our prayers, vote our conscience, and hopefully things will come out right. But I'm agreeing with you. There's no call right now that says it'll be Hillary. And I do think there's other Republican candidates such as Huckabee that are going to be a better. I like Rudy Giuliani, but I don't think he's a president. And that's my opinion to my fellow believers is, boy, don't compromise. Don't try to second-guess the election. Do the right thing.
And, you know, there's nothing that says that this would be the winning choice because as we've looked back at the last few election cycles, pro-life is a winning issue. To put a pro-abortion candidate at in the presidential race as your candidate, it's a big risk for Republicans because I think when you look at who votes and who gets active in these elections, it's often the Christians, the conservatives, and the pro-lifers. So you may see many stay home or stay uninvolved if you've got a pro-abortion candidate.
Let's go to Bob and Terrell. Bob, thank you for calling. What's your view?
Yes, Dr. Johnson, we should not put our views down the tube as to putting abortion down the tube and stuff like that. I support Huckabee. Because we should be out there showing what Hillary Clinton is for. She's a feminist, and she's abortion, and she's for illegal immigration.
All right, a long list of bad stuff about Hillary Clinton, and Bob is saying we don't compromise. We stand on principle. If we win, we know we've won, and if we lost, we know we've lost. But wouldn't it be terrible to back a compromise candidate to win and then find out you really lost on the issues? We got Rich on the line from Dallas. Rich, thank you for calling. What's your view? Rich?
I'm with a gentleman that says unequivocally no, that we should never compromise. The only issue that I see is that we have a time delay situation here that we must get out and vote in the right candidate on the Republican ticket in order to have a true choice.
Yes.
Hillary is absolutely not a choice for our country. And, you know, if I'm cornered into having to vote against her, I will do that.
But right now, what you're saying is in the primary time, this is the time to get involved in a pro-life candidate's campaign, to give, to support someone in the primaries that really could be a strong pro-life alternative.
Absolutely. Look at Huckabee and look and see what's happening to his rise. I have to believe that that's tied to his theological stance.
Well, he is surging. In fact, what I want to do right now is go to a different issue. We've been talking about the pro-life issue and the pro-marriage issue, but you know, a lot of conservatives are strong on the Second Amendment, and I want us to go to a YouTube question that could be asked tonight. Here it is on gun control.
I come to you with a very important question today regarding gun control, my Second Amendment rights. I, being an avid hunter and sportsman enthusiast, love a good gun. I'm an intelligent, responsible American who likes to have my guns. So my question to you is, how and when are you going to expand my Second Amendment rights so that I can have an Abrams tank or a flamethrower legally? Thank you for your time.
All right. So I don't know if that one's going to be put forward tonight, but Penna, there's a serious question behind this. Rudy Giuliani, not only pro-abortion, not only pro-gay marriage and recognition, but he has been supporting gun control. He's not a Second Amendment supporter. Here's Fred Thompson really attacking Giuliani on this point.
And now I understand he's very much approves of the Supreme Court taking jurisdiction of this Washington, D.C. case, which most Second Amendment advocates think will establish that the Second Amendment means what it says.
Okay, so that's Fred Thompson saying, look, the Second Amendment means what it says. And Rudy is acting now like he supports this reaffirmation of the Second Amendment at the Supreme Court level. And I think Thompson's saying, you know, he is changing his tune here just to get the presidency. So when we come back, we're going to explore this question. NRA members, you call in. How important is the Second Amendment? How important is the sanctity of human life? How important is marriage? We've got Jake on the line holding. We've got Dorcas. I hope you'll hang on. We'll put you right on when we come back. Others call in, 800-881-9270, 800-881-9270. Is it Huckabee? Is it McCain? Who is it for you, Tancredo or Hunter? Tell us who you support and why. It's Jerry Johnson Live with Penn Dexter. We'll be right back.
You heard the discussions.
Because we've talked about a lot of the problems, but we want to transition now to practical solutions.
And the solutions.
Check their content, you check their conduct, and you check their converts.
Now hear it all again, anytime. KCBI's Town Hall Meeting, The Battle for Truth, Beware of False Prophets.
Nobody likes controversy, and yet there's some things worth fighting for.
This exclusive presentation is available in a 2-CD set. It makes a great resource for you, a friend, even a church library.
And I think what we need to do is we need to preach the truth.
To order, call anytime, 817-299-4247 and follow the prompts.
I have no problem with people teaching that God wants to bless them.
The Battle for Truth.
But when it just comes to that one issue right there, you know, it's either put up or shut up.
It's a month-long focus here on CRN, the Criswell Radio Network.
You're listening to Jerry Johnson Live. Now here's your host, Dr. Jerry Johnson, president of Criswell College and Criswell Communications.
Hello, Mitt Romney. In preparing for the Republican YouTube debate, it's come to my attention that you feel answering a question from me would degrade the presidency. Lighten up slightly. From family snowman to family man, I hope you can appreciate that no one is more qualified to ask a question.
All right, that's enough of that. That's the snowman from the last YouTube debate, and he's asking Romney to lighten up because Romney said, look, he didn't know if this format really made sense with these silly kind of questions. The snowman was asking a global warming question. And Romney's certainly an issue, and his Mormonism an issue, and we're going to talk about that in just a minute. But our callers are holding. Jake is on the line. Jake, who are you supporting? What do you think our strategy ought to be as Christians?
Well, I don't think we should compromise. I'm really, I think Rudy's probably a nice guy, and at first I was thinking about Fred Thompson and even took a second look at Ron Paul, but I'll be honest with you, in the last few months, I'm totally with Huckabee.
Yeah, what do you like about Huckabee? What do you like about him?
Well, he's a conservative, for one. Not a conservative with liberal ties and liberal views. He seems to kind of hold down that conservative stance. And I know people attack him on his taxes. You know, they say, your tax history is a little shady. Well, I understand that, but, I mean, if everybody's talking about, you know, compromising with Giuliani and abortion and gay rights, but they're gripe because, well, his tax history is shady. Well, let's put our, I don't know, it just seems like we're really out of balance in that.
Hey, Jake, I think that's an important point in that the fact is when the Republicans controlled the Congress and the White House, they were tax and spend and pork barrel. They did not do what they said they would do. And I don't know that there are any Republicans that will really hold the line on spending. And so to fault Huckabee for being a big spender or having an ambitious spending program may not be so important. If he stands for human life, if he stands for marriage, maybe these are the most important issues for Christians. What do you think out there? Dorcas on the line. Dorcas calling. Thank you. What do you think?
Hi there. I'm going to give you a little bit of a qualified statement. I'm going to vote for Huckabee in the primaries.
Yeah.
But I will say, if Huckabee does not make it on the ballot,
right,
I'm going to have to go Republican. Because even if it's Giuliani, there's better chance of him putting conservative judges on the bench than Hillary, Obama, or Edwards, any of those.
Hey, so, Dorcas, I think that's a very important point that when you listen to the last Democrat debate, they ask all of the candidates if they would have a litmus test on Roe versus Wade. And all of them up and down the line said, yes, they would not appoint a justice that would even consider overturning Roe versus Wade. Giuliani's answer is different. Giuliani says, I would appoint people like Alito or Roberts. At least he gives lip service to original understanding of the Constitution and judges not legislating from the bench. At least he acts like there's a chance we might get a pro-life kind of a judge, whereas we know we would not on the other side of the aisle.
It's very interesting, though. Tony Perkins pointed this out in an article this week in the Washington Times. Tony Perkins is president of the Family Research Council. He has a show on KCBI on Saturdays. He said, you know, when you look back to what Giuliani said about strict constructionism, and I think we played this cut before, he said it would be okay if a strict constructionist was viewed as a judge appointed or really went with Roe versus Wade as president, or if he overturned, it would either way. So basically what he's saying is, I'm going to appoint someone who sticks with the Constitution, who says he will. Now, what that means is up for grabs. So in a sense, I don't know that we really trust that Rudy Giuliani would appoint judges that are going to lean pro-life. I think that's really a stretch to assume that, and Tony pointed that out.
It's at best 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
And you might have to make that decision in the general election, but right now we're in the primary process. Why would pro-lifers pile on to this campaign when they have other alternatives? We got Dave on the line from Garland. Dave, thank you for calling and holding. What's your view?
Well, I'm supporting Duncan Hunter. I think he's the best candidate. My question on Mike Huckabee is that, on Point of View a few weeks ago, they had someone call in and say that he's a lot like Bill Clinton, and it's from the same town and is kind of not what he's supposed to be.
Well, just because he's from the same town, that doesn't mean he's like him.
Well, that's what they said, and I wondered if Kirby had checked into that, if y'all had any information on that.
Well, I would say they're worlds apart. When you look at his record as a governor and the scandal levels, and Huckabee running as a pro-life candidate, Clinton ran as a pro-abortion candidate. So there's one big difference. Clinton ran as a pro-choice, pro-abortion presidential candidate. Mike Huckabee has run as a pro-life, and he's always governed pro-life. And so I think that's one big difference. Yes, Mike Huckabee's record is not perfect, and I've got an article that came out here today saying that Huckabee is glossing over his Arkansas record. And I think as he comes to the top, we're going to see certain issues that you might be concerned about with Mike Huckabee. But the fundamental point is, he has always governed pro-life and says he's pro-life, whereas obviously Clinton and company are not.
The two things that have bothered people about Huckabee's record have to do with his treatment of illegal immigrants and taxing. And there's been a lot of debate on his tax increases, which he did do. And we can go into that a little bit later. But Dick Morris, who actually worked for him for a while, put out an article today explaining some of the tax increases, and that ought to be interesting. Huckabee needs to do that. I think he needs to get out and talk about that.
And others have complained that he kept Clinton appointees in office in Arkansas. And again, I think people need to look more into that. But they are night and day on their positions and the way they've governed, I believe, particularly on the life issue. Well, this show is about the Christian worldview, and I don't know if this question is going to be asked tonight, but obviously Mitt Romney is a Mormon, and that's become a point of contention for a lot of Christians. Let's think about that for a moment. Here is a question on YouTube that might be asked tonight.
This is Chris Elliman from Tacoma, Washington, and I have a question for everyone. In the last presidential election, we saw the pivotal role that religion plays in politics. Now, the Bible says in John 14:6, Jesus says, I am the way and the truth and the life, and that no one comes to the Father except through me. Now, in light of what the Bible says, I have this one two-part question to ask you, and I challenge you not to divert, but answer directly both parts of the question. How does someone get to heaven, and will you be there?
Well, that's going to be very interesting, and I don't think they will obey the request not to divert. I cannot imagine a politician addressing that question, and Mike Huckabee might address that question, and he was pressed on Bill O'Reilly in kind of a rude fashion on that question, and I've noticed that O'Reilly always brings that question up with evangelical Christians, whether it's Jerry Falwell or anyone else, because even among conservatives, it's sort of taboo to say that Jesus is the only way.
Mm-hmm.
But that is the evangelical Christian answer. That is the biblical answer. It would be very interesting to see how they handle that one. But Romney has a different problem, and that is it's not just that he's an unclear or weak kind of a Christian. It's that he is a Mormon. And he says he's true blue and not a cafeteria Mormon. And that's code in Mormonism for I believe it all, the holy underwear. When is that going to come up?
It has come
Mitt
up.
Romney,
wouldn't
do you
answer
wear
it.
Holy underwear? Do you hold on to them when you take a bath? because a true blue Mormon does that. They never separate from those special underwear. Do you believe that Jesus is the half-brother of Satan? Do you believe what God is today, someday we will become? And if he wins the nomination, that kind of question about Mormonism is going to be asked. It has not been asked yet. Mormonism has really weird features. And is he gullible to believe that, or is he just strange? I don't think there should be necessarily a religious test for being president, but there's a credibility factor when it comes to these kinds of oddball cultic beliefs. Mormonism is a cult. Well, we've got other callers on the line. I think Daryl is our next caller. Daryl, what do you think?
Well, I had a comment I wanted to make about the marriage.
Go for it.
They're always screaming now. They want to separate the church and state. And to me, marriage was created by God, was created for the church, was created for the Christian. The state has no right to change it in any form or fashion. It belongs to us.
Well, thank you, Daryl. I think that you've got marriage in the Bible before you have the nation of Israel. God establishes the institution of the home, and you're right, the government has no business redefining marriage, and I think that should be a no-brainer for these politicians.
It wouldn't be good for the culture anyway. Even if you took religion out of it, marriage has served the world and all societies well, and when you remove it, you end up having the government come in to do a lot of the things that the family does.
All right, we got two callers. Let's see if we can zip them in. We got Carolyn on the line. Carolyn, what do you think?
Well, God love y'all. Y'all are always just hitting the nail on the head, and I so appreciate that. And y'all know I'm very biased toward Duncan Hunter.
That's fine.
That he is, I have done my homework, and I don't know how many of y'all have, but he has never folded on pro-life.
That's right.
He has never folded on amnesty, illegal immigration, border security.
Carolyn, we're out of time, but I'm going to tell people to go to that website. What's the address of that website?
www.gohunter08.com.
Gohunter08.com. His first fundamental issue is the sanctity of human life, if you go to that website. He has marriage on there. I mean, he has the biblical, social, ethical issues that are of concern to Christians and conservative evangelicals. He is standing on principle, and that's very interesting. Well, when we come back, who really gives more to charity? Who really helps the poor? Is it the liberals? Is it the secularists that want to raise your taxes and give money from the middle class and the rich to the poor? Or is it conservative evangelical Christians that support the needy? The results will surprise you.
You're listening to Jerry Johnson Live. Now here's your host, Dr. Jerry Johnson, president of Criswell College and Criswell Communications.
Even though I approved of Afghanistan and opposed Iraq from the beginning, I still resent that I was not asked or given the opportunity to support those soldiers.
All right, that's former President Bill Clinton campaigning for his wife in Iowa. She's in trouble. Barack Obama has pulled ahead in Iowa, so they bring out the big gun, President Clinton, up there speaking in Iowa. But the interesting thing about that soundbite is not that he, I think, ingenuously claims that he didn't support the war in Iraq. He did at the time. In fact, he had shot missiles at Saddam Hussein during his presidency. Mm-hmm. But he says, I wasn't given the opportunity to contribute to the war effort. Now, what he was talking about is taxes, tax increases, tax rates. And he's claiming, along with Warren Buffett and others, that the rich people in America don't pay enough taxes, and that George Bush has been cutting taxes for wealthy people, and that the Republicans cut taxes for wealthy people, and that the Democrats, the liberals, are generous. They want to give to poverty. They want to give to poor people. They want to spread the wealth. But there's a very interesting fundamental point there that we want to explore right now, and that's this. Who gives more to the poor? Who gives more to the needy? What kind of people, what kinds of people actually help those in need? And the answer may surprise you.
Yeah, is it really fair to give secularists and liberals the credit for being the party of the poor? Is that really the case? We're going to look at history a little bit here and speak with a guest who is a graduate of Princeton and now an assistant professor in the Department of Political Science at Brigham Young University. He's written a book called Bonds of Affection, Civic Charity, and the Making of America, Winthrop, Jefferson, and Lincoln. And he is Matthew Holland. Matthew, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be with you.
We're talking about presidential politics right now. And, you know, when you look at the parties, Democrats get the, the reputation for being the party of the poor. John Edwards, one of the candidates, has made that his centerpiece for his campaign. Sometimes Republicans, more associated with Christians, are looked at as hard-hearted. Does that have a precedent in history, or is it a different story?
Well, the unfortunate thing about the rhetoric these days is that Republicans or Christians who, many of whom are very committed to principles of charity and giving and welfare, but who don't believe that the federal government is the best vehicle for doing that, get beat up as being hard-hearted. Mm-hmm. When it's not that they don't care, it's that they have a different philosophy about how the charity, how the welfare should be rendered. And so it really is, I think, unfortunate and often unjust when a number of Republicans and Christians get tarred with that reputation of about being uncaring.
Matthew, take us back to the beginnings of our country, because we didn't start with a Department of Health and Human Services. Who was out there helping the poor?
Well, in my book, I talk about principles of charity that are with us really from the beginning, primarily the Puritan founding of America. So when John Winthrop sails to America from England, he gives a speech called A Model of Christian Charity. And this was his vision for what life should be like in New England. And he basically said, look, we have to care about one another. We have to take care of the poorest of the poor. And much of that was done through the churches and through individual efforts, though there was some role for public institutions and for government itself to play a role. But it was always a piece part of a larger culture that was inspired by religious ideals that that instituted these principles of giving and care for the poor.
Our guest is Matthew Holland, and his book is Bonds of Affection, Civic Charity, and the Making of America. What if we reverted back today to a system where it was the church's responsibility, not so much the government? I mean, Marvin Olasky has advocated that, doing that gradually, or at least giving churches an equal place at giving government money, sort of this compassionate conservatism. Would that work now?
Well, I think if it would work, I think it would have to be done gradually. Part of the problem about, again, learning from history, which I obviously think we can and should do, is that the situation is different. The context is different. We're a bigger, more integrated society. It's there are times and places where certain conditions may overwhelm what any one single institution can do, and there may be parts or areas of the country where churches don't have a robust enough presence.
Well, there certainly are.
So I think we have to take into account for that, and so there's probably more of a role here for some aspects of government to play than, say, 100, 200 years ago. But nevertheless, I do think that it's a mistake to believe that this is entirely the government's responsibility, and that there aren't really important and robust roles to play for churches and private organizations and individuals to step up and really take a lead on some of these things.
You're listening to Jerry Johnson Live. We're talking to Matthew Holland. He's written the book Bonds of Affection, Civic Charity, and the Making of America. Matthew, let me ask you this question. I think de Tocqueville, when he came to America, he said, you know, I was trying to find out the secret of this country. And he said it was voluntary organizations and particularly the churches. He saw as sort of the distinctive glue really holding the culture together and meeting needs. Fast forward to Katrina, we saw the government impotent, state government, local government, federal government. But really, Christians, churches, particularly the Baptist, I'm proud to say because I'm a Baptist, that the Baptist really came in force to help out after Katrina. What is it going to take for Americans to, you know, quit looking to Washington, D.C., quit looking to Austin, Texas, or to Provo or Salt Lake City, and to look to their local church, their local community, you know, to meet these needs?
Well, it's a great, great aspiration, and something that that resonates with me. And I think it probably requires approaching it from a number of different angles. One of it is to just reeducate ourselves as a people. A, that we have these obligations, but B, that they can be and need to be addressed from a number of different sources. And appreciate that part of the reason we have the impulse in the first place, even at the federal government, and secularists will often deny this, but it is a legacy of our religious foundations. And so recovering an appreciation for that, I think, will make us all attuned that we need to step in and help. I think as people can see from these experiences and learn from them and say, look, churches can come in coordinated fashion and make a big difference and see the real success of that, then that will have, I think, a sort of cascading effect, and others will follow suit. So we need to encourage that to happen on an even greater level.
Hey, Matthew, I want to divert just a moment, although I think that all these topics are interrelated. We've got the YouTube debate tonight for the presidential candidates, and you're up there in Utah at Brigham Young University. Mitt Romney is a Mormon running for president. What do you think Mitt Romney is going to have to do to allay fears that conservative evangelicals may have about supporting a Mormon who's running for president? Did you see a move that he needs to make? I mean, you're a professor there in political science at Brigham Young. Sure. What are you thinking about this?
Well, you know, there are lots of different thoughts about what he needs to do. Does he need to give a speech like JFK did to ministers to allay the fears about his Catholicism? I'm not necessarily one who advocates doing something like that, in part because I think there will be these important, you know, theological issues that will be a stumbling block for evangelicals and Mormons to come to grips with in many respects. And I think that what he needs to do is acknowledge that there are those differences, reassure these parties that he's not looking for the White House as a platform to issue forth his Mormonism for the whole country, but focus on what they have in common. And here, I think there's terrific common ground, and that's to hit repeatedly this message, both verbally and in action, in terms of the policies that he takes, to say there's a lot that can unite the Mormon and the evangelical communities on social conservative issues, and if we don't learn to fight this fight together, we will find ourselves at the whim of secularists and others who want to take the country in very different directions on important issues. And so we've got to find a way to fight together first on these broader common public issues, and then we can discuss and in charity, as I might say with the title of my book, discuss our theological differences in another context and in another way.
He's not running for pastor, in other words. He's running
exactly
for president. Well, Matthew Holland, thank you so much for being on the line. Your book, Bonds of Affection, Civic Charity and the Making of America. We hope to have you back sometime.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Dr. Johnson.
And folks, let me also recommend the book by author Brooks, Who Really Cares? America's Charity Divide, Who Gives, Who Doesn't, and Why It Matters. Brooks shows, like Holland, that conservative evangelical Christians through the years have been the greatest supporters of charity, helping the poor, helping the needy. It's not the big government secularist. It's a conservative evangelical Christians who give to the poor and the needy. What did you think of that answer about Mitt Romney? When we come back, I'll respond to that. And we'll also talk to about why Christians should be involved in politics.
You heard the discussions.
Because we've talked about a lot of the problems, but we want to transition now to practical solutions.
And the solutions.
Check their content, you check their conduct, and you check their converts.
Now hear it all again, anytime. KCBI's Town Hall Meeting, The Battle for Truth. Beware of false prophets.
Nobody likes controversy, and yet there's some things worth fighting for.
This exclusive presentation is available in a 2-CD set. It makes a great resource for you, a friend, even a church library.
And I think what we need to do is we need to preach the truth.
To order, call anytime, 817-299-4247 and follow the prompts.
I have no problem with people teaching that God wants to bless them.
The Battle for Truth.
But when it just comes to that one issue right there, you know, it's either put up or shut up.
It's a month-long focus here on CRN, the Criswell Radio Network.
You're listening to Jerry Johnson Live. Now here's your host, Dr. Jerry Johnson, president of Criswell College and Criswell Communications.
The United States has been far too involved in sort of looking the other way, not only at the atrocities of human rights and violation of women.
Okay, that's former governor of Arkansas, Mike Huckabee. He's running for president of the United States. He's surging, and he's reacting to this story of the Saudi court sentencing this woman to 6 months in jail, 200 lashes. She was raped by six or seven men. And then another story today in the news, we actually talked about it yesterday, the British school teacher in the Sudan, her students named a little teddy bear, Muhammad, and she's sentenced to 40 lashes for this. And, Penna, what I don't hear is human rights groups and women's groups speaking out on this. Mike Huckabee is surging right now. He's sort of the man on the spot tonight, I think. He really stands to gain if he does well tonight. He's surging ahead in Iowa. But what do you make of this development?
You know, I think NOW might have been able to make itself relevant again if it had come in and weighed in as we were making the decision to go into Iraq. I mean, it was about weapons of mass destruction, but it was also about the abuses of women in the Islamic society and just the abuses of people in general. You don't hear much from Amnesty International or any of these other groups. I'd like to go and hear and see what they have to say about this particular woman in Saudi Arabia, where religious freedom is absolutely non-existent and women are just second-class citizens. I do think we have a politically correct culture in our White House in Washington, D.C. The Bush administration has been unwilling to speak out against Islam and the practice of Islam in many ways. And I think Mike Huckabee there is speaking out against that. He has a compassionate side to him, and I think that came out in that statement.
Okay. Sharia law is not compatible with democracy or American values.
No.
And I want to repeat a question, a YouTube question that has been put forth to Giuliani. And listen carefully to the end of this question, and we'll talk about it.
I'm Kelly from St. Louis. I have a question for Mayor Giuliani. Mayor Giuliani, when the war on terror is finally won, do you believe it will be due primarily to military-type actions, police-type actions, or something else, like positive changes in the relationships between cultures?
Okay, this young woman is asking what will finally tip the balance in the war on terror, and she talked about this battle between cultures or understanding between cultures. And Samuel Huntington wrote a famous article about this several years ago called The Clash of Civilizations, and he saw, prophetically, I think, that we were headed for a clash, a battle, a world war. Newt Gingrich has called this World War III. And I don't know if there will be any peace, between those who want to impose Sharia law on the rest of the world and a new Islamic caliphate on the rest of the world, and those of us who believe in freedom and in a democratic republic like we have here in the United States. And I think that question, though, is the fundamental question of the hour. And this is where I would agree with Matthew Holland, who we just talked about. And that is this. Mitt Romney is not running for pastor. He's running for president. But I do think he's going to take a big hit when the specifics of Mormonism come out. Again, Mitt Romney mentioned this week, I believe in God. I believe in Jesus Christ. I'm glad anytime anybody says that. But if he's a true blue Mormon, he doesn't believe that Jesus Christ is co-equal with the Father as God. He believes that Jesus Christ is a created being. He believes that Jesus Christ is a half-brother of Satan. He believes that Jesus Christ came to America and that there's another testament of Jesus Christ. It will do no good for Mitt Romney to go around saying he believes in Jesus Christ. Matthew Holland was correct. He doesn't need to pretend to have the same theology. He needs to say, my view of Jesus is completely different than the evangelical Christian view, but I'm not running for pastor, I'm running for president. And I do agree with evangelical Christians on marriage. I agree with them on abortion. Mm-hmm. I agree with them on these other issues and on these cultural issues, that is Islam and Sharia law versus the American democratic free society that we have. And there we are together on those issues.
You know, that's exactly what he said in his speech at the Values Voters Summit. But, you know, there are other times when he, I don't know, sort of tries to have it both ways, I think, when he makes statements like he made in this particular piece that was reported on in the Washington Times, where he says, I believe in Jesus Christ, I believe in God. Okay, fine. But, you know, let's just say we're different and move on to the yes. issues that we agree on. That's the smartest way to do it. Now, I think the people in the Christian community who have supported Romney, I mean, we've got people like Mark DeMoss, Pat Robertson, Paul Weyrich, and others who are supporting Romney, Bob Jones, Jay Sekulow, you know, those type of folks. They see this. They see the agreement on the issues, and they're going with that. I do think Mitt Romney needs to be clear, because when you go to Iowa, the support for Huckabee is Christians. The Christian conservatives are now, you can see in the polls, they're going for Huckabee. And so if Romney wants to get more support or move back into first place, he needs to make clear that these are the issues, but I'm not trying to be Mr. Pastor, Mr. Christian.
Well, speaking of Mike Huckabee, I want to go back to one more YouTube question, which I will be very surprised if they air this one tonight, but it is about the most important question that anyone could ever be asked. It's about the question of salvation.
My name is Chris Elliman from Tacoma, Washington, and I have a question for everyone. In the last presidential election, we saw the pivotal role that religion plays in politics. Now, the Bible says in John 14:6, Jesus says, I am the way and the truth and the life, and that no one comes to the Father except through me. Now, in light of what the Bible says, I have this one two-part question to ask you, and I challenge you not to divert, but answer directly both parts of the question. How does someone get to heaven, and will you be there?
All right, how does someone get to heaven, and will you be there? Wouldn't you like to hear that question asked and answered tonight? Maybe it will be. You should watch the debate. I remember they asked, what was the greatest mistake you ever made? Tom Tancredo said two or three debates ago, waiting until I was an adult to receive Jesus Christ. President Bush asked years ago, who is the greatest philosopher, your favorite philosopher? President Bush said, Jesus Christ. We may see one of those moments. But indeed, the answer was in the question. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one goes to the Father, comes to heaven, but through me. Why? Jesus Christ is the only person to live a sinless life, to die on a cross for your sins, to take the judgment and the hell that we deserve as a substitute. He's the only one to be buried and raised from the dead. He's the only one that offers both forgiveness and a new kind of life and power to live that kind of life through the power of the resurrection and the indwelling Holy Spirit. You must look to Jesus, turn to Jesus, believe in Jesus. Whoever calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. That is the right answer to that question.
You've been listening to Jerry Johnson Live, a Christian Worldview radio show. Join Dr. Jerry Johnson, president of Criswell College and Criswell Communications, Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. for an hour of relevant discussion of news and culture from a Christian perspective.